In 2023, I had an unusual and terrifying experience, something I wouldn't have experienced if so many bad things hadn't happened to me before. It started with a layoff, a downsizing. They said nothing personal. They gave me an awkward smile, a worthless letter of recommendation, and a check that barely covered a couple months' rent. I didn't worry too much at first. I'd always been able to find something else. Then my wife left. "It's not just about the money," she told me, as if that would make it hurt less, as if love had a limit on how long it could last and mine had suddenly expired. She packed her things one afternoon, closed the door more delicately than I expected, and after that the house felt different. Next came the money. At first it trickled away, then like water through my fingers, small debts, a couple of late payments, bills that suddenly felt heavier. Then it was the car that ended up in someone else's hands. Then my apartment. Somehow my whole life began to unravel thread by thread until barely anything recognizable remained. I put an ad on a Facebook page offering myself for everything. Although what I was really looking for was something as an accountant, I was open to anything. I knew how to drive, I could make deliveries, I had mechanical skills, I understood technology and I could install almost anything, anything as long as I didn't keep watching my bank account drain. It was in one of these groups that someone from an agency contacted me. The message was brief and direct. They needed staff for certain jobs. No experience was required and they would pay me pesos in cash just for attending the interview. It seemed strange to me, too good to be true, but hunger and desperation don't let you think clearly. ₱2,000 just to go and hear what it was about, which could go wrong. I accepted without asking too many questions. They gave me an address and a time. Not a location, not an office in the center, but a meeting point in a neighborhood I didn't know well. They told me someone would pick me up there. There was something strange about all this, of course. But when life has been taking one thing after another away from you, the strange stops seeming dangerous and becomes just another option. I saw them at the meeting point and they took me in a van to a large funeral home outside the city. From the outside it looked like any other, but when I went in I noticed that there were several people installing things, lamps, structures, some type of wiring. I didn't pay much attention, I just lined up where they told me and waited my turn. The interview was strange. They didn't ask me much about what I knew how to do. Instead, they asked personal questions about my family, who I lived with, how many there were, did I keep in touch with my cousins, my uncles, did I have children. I answered without thinking too much. I was there to earn money, not to analyze the hiring process. Then they took us to a chapel inside the funeral home and left us waiting for the results. In the meantime, they gave us the pesos in cash, which immediately relaxed everyone. One of the people there commented almost enthusiastically that it must have been for a Netflix series because he had seen them putting up lights. Another said that it did look like an agency because none of the people there that day seemed to work at the funeral home. About 2 hours went by before anyone returned with us. They called everyone else and dismissed them without explanation. They only left me. There was a girl with a notebook, calmly looking through it. When she got to my page, she saw that my name was written down and right next to it, underlined several times, was the number of relatives I had mentioned in the interview. I counted all my uncles, my cousins, my sister and her family. I even mentioned my ex-wife and the girls. They asked me if I could bring them all. My first thought was a pyramid scheme, but instead of asking me for money to enter, as was usual, they were going to give each of us an envelope with 6,000 euros. In addition to the 6,000 pesos, I would be paid an extra 2,000 pesos for each person I brought. If I brought 20 people for one night, I would be given 46,000 pesos, a little over $2,000. They didn't say what the job entailed yet, only that payment was immediate. When I asked what I had to do or what exactly we had to do, they told me to first make the necessary calls to confirm how many people could join me. I got 36 in total, including family and friends. If you don't mention money, no one can. But that day, almost everyone rushed what they were doing to be free by 6 p.m. when I told the girl with the notebook. She smiled and said it was more than fine. She called someone on the phone, spoke quietly for a few minutes, and when she hung up, she gave me new instructions. People were to arrive sharply at 6 p.m. She also asked me to dress in black and to prepare a few words for each person. He handed me a stack of printed programs. On them was the deceased's name, a date of birth, a date of death, and a couple of generic sentences about eternal rest. That's when they explained to me what the job entailed. We're going to hold a wake for a stranger, someone who had no family or friends to say goodbye to, but who had left enough money and insurance before he died so that his funeral would be held with all the formalities of life. It's not a TV show, then, I muttered. But if it wasn't, why were there so many people setting up lights and structures? Because it all seemed like a staged production. The girl stopped smiling, looked at me intently, and said with dry calm, "We don't pay you to ask questions." She handed me an envelope with a cash advance and assigned me three vans with drivers to pick up the people. I couldn't back out. At 6 o'clock, family and friends entered the funeral home. We were ushered in through a side door away from the main entrance. There were no visible employees, just the ones who had hired us and a few assistants dressed in black suits. We were ushered into the main chapel, a large room with marble walls and a discreet altar in the back. In the center, the closed casket with a gold cross on top. We settled into the pews in small groups. The first conversations were hushed, with the discomfort of those not used to funerals. "When are we going to get paid?" one asked. "I guess it was the end," another replied, looking around. The minutes passed and no one gave us any instructions. Someone tried to make a joke to break the tension, but the awkwardness in the air remained. There, sticky as the humidity in the room. At 7 o'clock, the lights dimmed. The murmur died down and then we saw the cameras turn on. It wasn't just one or two, there were several strategically placed in the corners, in the high nooks of the walls. It seemed as if the funeral was being broadcast live to another location, but in whose eyes we looked at each other with the same question. There were no explanations, only the sound of an organ playing a slow and mournful melody. A tall man dressed in a three-piece suit walked to the front and stood next to the coffin. He didn't say his name, just raised a hand as if to indicate that everything was about to begin. At 8 o'clock, two assistants in white gloves approached and with synchronized movements opened the coffin. At first, no one dared to stand up, but then the assistants began to force us. A line formed in which little by little, one by one, we leaned forward a little to see. At that moment someone chuckled. "I know what this is," he muttered. "It's a joke." But no one else laughed because the body didn't look like a mannequin, it didn't look like a production, it looked like a real corpse. But I have to admit that from that moment on we realized something was wrong. The skin was too smooth in some places, too tight in others, as if they had tried to restore a corpse that was beyond repair. It looked fake, but at the same time too real. The eyes were closed, but the eyelids had no wrinkles. The neck looked stiffer than usual with the skin stretched over the bones. "This is a huge production," someone said. "But of what?" No one answered. No one had an answer. We stood there looking at the body until one of the assistants closed the coffin. The organ continued to sound and the feeling that something was out of place began to sink deeper into the skin. At 9 o'clock, someone noticed that the body was moving. Not a spasm, not a nervous reflex, it was moving. Someone first saw a slight tremor in the coffin. Another said that he thought he saw movement under the lid, as if something had shifted inside. "It's my imagination, right?" But then it happened again. It wasn't a reflex. The coffin shook and then there was a loud thud from inside. Someone stood up suddenly as if he was going to run away from the shock, but they didn't let him. "It's part of the event," said an attendee. "Don't be alarmed." The cameras were still rolling, the organ kept playing and the coffin shook again, this time louder, as if something inside was trying to move. Someone muttered an insult and turned pale, but no one else moved. It was as if terror had left us rooted to the spot. At 10 o'clock, someone in the group disappeared. We didn't realize it right away, only someone noticed that one person was missing. My cousin's boyfriend was suddenly gone. We kept looking around until someone else directed us. The person they were looking for peeked out from behind the curtains. We looked in that direction. They were heavy curtains covering a side entrance. They were thick, almost to the floor. A couple of people approached slowly. "Maybe he went to the bathroom," one said incredulously. But when they reached out to open the curtains, an aide stepped in. "You can't get through." "But the boy, you can't get through." The tension in the room rose sharply. Someone tried to get up to leave, but the aide blocked the door. The funeral wasn't over. No one spoke in hushed tones anymore. No one tried to pretend this was normal anymore. An aunt stood up, ready to push anyone out of there. But before she could, a man entered through the front door, wearing a black suit and carrying a black suitcase in his hand. "We'll give you some now." There was silence. The guy showed us the money. Wads of bills inside thick envelopes. "Sit down, be quiet, and respect the dead." There was a moment of hesitation, but the money was there. Little by little, one by one, we sat back down. Desperation has many faces. The cameras were still rolling, the organ was still playing, and then from the another knock, louder and clearer, as if whatever was inside was ready to come out. The hollow sound inside the coffin continued to reverberate through the chapel. No one spoke, no one moved. The man with the suitcase of money looked at us as if he expected us to continue sitting, to continue obeying. Then the side door opened. The man who had disappeared between the curtains entered, my cousin's boyfriend. At that moment, he was no longer wearing the jacket we had seen him in before. Now he was wearing a long, red tunic with heavy folds that reached his ankles. In his hands he held a written sheet of paper, a thick, aged paper. It seemed that he had been recruited to perform a part of the strange ritual that was about to begin. The boy walked slowly to the center of the chapel and stopped in front of the coffin. Before he could speak, the main door flew open. More people began to enter. They were not assistants, they were not employees. They were people dressed in black, in formal clothes, with serious faces. Each one held a book in his hands. They handed one to each of us. When we opened it, we saw that it was a missal. They told us to look for the corresponding mass for the date and the day we were on. The pages were full of terrifying illustrations. There were also entire pages showing symbols, ancient and strange words. My cousin's boyfriend cleared his throat and then began to read from what he held in his hands. There was a rhythm to the sentences, a hypnotic cadence, something that felt wrong, as if each syllable was touching an exposed nerve in the skin. The lights in the chapel flickered. The mourners walked to the coffin and opened it without saying a single word. The dead man stood up. Not suddenly, not like in a cheap horror movie. He stood up awkwardly, stiffly, as if every movement was difficult for him. His fingers trembled as he tried to steady himself on the edges of the box. His legs seemed weak, as if he still didn't know how to use them. He leaned forward with his head hanging toward his chest. Then he climbed down from the coffin. No one was allowed to help him. We stood frozen, watching as this corpse with taut skin and closed eyes tried to take its first step. Quote, "We are witnesses to the incarnation of a soul that has chosen this body," my cousin's boyfriend said. The dead man shook his head as if trying to understand where he was. Quote, "Our participation is essential." The dead man took a deep breath, making a dull sound, as if his lungs were just remembering how to function. "We are blind witnesses," the man in the red robe continued. "We do not know what we are witnessing. We do not understand what we are a part of." We stood silently, staring at the corpse that was no longer a corpse. The words on the manuscript were unclear, or at least I was having a hard time understanding what they meant. Perhaps the way they were written was designed so that we would not understand. They used calculated or elaborate language, as if they were constructing an elegant lie around the truth we were all seeing. No one dared to speak until an older woman approached me. The old woman from the group with the others grabbed my arm with surprising strength for her age and whispered close to my ear. She told me that this was not a resurrection. It was not a soul that entered that body. I stood still and looked at her. "What we just saw." The woman leaned toward me, her voice even lower, as if she feared someone else would hear. "What we just saw is the possession of a corpse. I felt the skin hellers. It's not a soul that woke up." The dead man lowered his head as if he were taking a breath. "It's something else." The organ kept playing, the cameras kept rolling. The woman squeezed my arm. They didn't bring him back to life. They just opened the door to something else. The dead man lifted his face and then, for the first time, opened his eyes. The woman let go of my arm just as the man in the black suit spoke again. "You were blind witnesses." He looked at us with that inhuman calm that everyone in there had. "That means you didn't know what was happening." The dead man, the one who was no longer dead, lowered his head and took a deep breath. "You didn't understand what you were taking part in." His words sounded more like an affirmation than an explanation. And that was essential to the ritual. We looked at each other, but no one said anything. The attendants began to collect the books from the benches. Those who had entered later, those who were with them, came up and shook our hands one by one. "Thank you for your participation." It was as if we had just signed an invisible contract. As if by not resisting, we had accepted that what happened inside should stay with us. They let us leave the chapel without further explanation. The main door was open. Outside, the vans were waiting for us with their engines running. When we got in, they handed us the envelopes. Each one contained 10,000 pesos. They handed me 6 cold, heavy envelopes. It was a lot of money for a single moment, for a few hours of sitting and watching, doing nothing. No one spoke on the way back. The vans dropped us off at a central point in Mexico City. We got out in silence with many envelopes of money in our hands, with the feeling that although it was all over, something had stuck with us. Like when you leave a place with the smell impregnated in your clothes, or when you feel that someone is watching you but no one is there. Some waved goodbye without saying a word. Others walked away quickly, as if they wanted to forget as soon as possible. But no one asked what we had done. No one dared, because deep down, we already knew it, because the money we were carrying was the price for having let something into this world, because it wasn't a person who rose from that coffin, it wasn't a soul returning to its body, it was something else. Something that didn't need us to exist, only to enter. And let's see, tell me, how does your conscience feel after having opened the door to a demon for 10,000 pesos?